I hope you're picking up some of that ambient background noise, listeners. I'm in a coffee shop in Kingsway, and out the window I can see fine-looking buildings called things like Africa House and Imperial House. And opposite me is Tony Travers of the London School of Economics, a man who knows a great deal about the history of London and its politics and its government. Now, Tony, I need enlightenment from you. This week I've spent an awful lot of time trying to really understand the mayor's budget, how it works, where the money comes from, and what this has done is concentrated my mind on the limitations on the mayor's power. Boris often described now as the most powerful Conservative in the country, but of course mayors aren't really all that powerful, and perhaps the main reason for that is that they are so dependent upon central government for the money that they need and for the various members of the GLA family, as it is sometimes called. Is this a satisfactory situation in your view?
It clearly isn't satisfactory, and the thing to remember is that Britain and London within it is one of the most centralised democracies of all the Western big countries. The council tax, the local tax that we pay, is only 5% of all the taxes that in total we give to government. And that means that the mayor and the London boroughs share that little bit of government income, council tax. I mean, people think it's a lot bigger than it is, by the way, but they share that. And that means that for most of their service, or most of the services that they provide, both the mayor and the boroughs, they get their income from government grants. These are often very complicated grants with lots of formulae to work out how they're paid out, but some of them are simply straightforward payments by central government to, say, the mayor. And for example, much of the money that the mayor gets for transport comes in these kind of one-off grants, which pay for things like the rebuilding of the tube and so on. So the mayor, like the boroughs, is very much dependent on money that comes from central government in order to provide the services that London requires.
So there's rather a large part of the mayor's job, it sounds to me, is concerned with lobbying. I mean, Boris has done quite a lot of rather public lobbying over Crossrail and money for upgrades, and he's about to get very cross again about tube lines and the situation there, which gives him an opportunity to be unkind about the Prime Minister, whose fault it all is, but also to beat the drum for London. Let's keep the money coming in, sort of sending a message to George Osborne in a way. But he has to do an awful lot of that, the mayor, doesn't he?
There's no doubt that one of the mayor's most important roles is to fight with Whitehall, both the Treasury, the Prime Minister, other bits of Whitehall, for the money that is required to spend on, in the mayor's case, transport, the police, some elements of economic development, the fire brigade, and the other things that go on at City Hall. And it is a big struggle. I mean, when Ken Livingstone was mayor, he managed to get a 10-year deal out of the government. These were in the days of plenty, before the banking meltdown and the recession, which promised £39,000 for transport, mostly the underground, over a 10-year period. Now, you can see how important that is, because it allowed the rebuilding of the existing tube, starting Crossrail, building the East London line, or improving it, and all the other things that are now going on. But as we look ahead, Boris Johnson as mayor eyes his old friend George Osborne as potential chancellor. Osborne would be faced with the question of whether he should give London all of the 39 billion, or would it be part of the economy drive that the Tories are promising?
So this slightly puts into context the hullabaloo and trumpeting about freezing the council tax precept, but that's another subject. But the other part of my attempts to understand the budget and has been to concentrate my mind on how limited are the powers of the Assembly, whose job it is, as we say, to hold the mayor to account. But we all know that there's not very much you can do, they can do, but they're supposed to have more power over the budget than over anything else, and yet there's very little they can do about that.
When the mayor and the Assembly were created back in, well, they started work in 2000, the idea was, in a sort of soup of New Labour friendliness as it was all created in the early days of the present government. That, you know, the mayor would be elected, the assembly would be elected, but they'd sort of work together and the assembly would oversee what the mayor did, and somehow it would all be sort of jolly and consensual. I think, you know, the reality is that British politics is adversarial. Politics like to beat up their opponents, metaphorically or politically, and indeed off on their own side, indeed, within London. And for that reason, what's happened is that the Assembly has been a kind of check, or supposed to be, and worked itself into a check on the mayor. The difficulty is they only have one real power a year when they can seriously check the mayor, and that is at budget time, when the law says that the mayor can put forward a budget, but the assembly could overturn the mayor's budget if they could get a two-thirds majority for their own budget. And that's quite a high hurdle if you think about it, given that the assembly has four different parties on it. Is it five actually these days? And you know, it's very difficult to get two-thirds majority for anything. So the assembly is relatively weak, and it has no powers to stop the mayor's other policies. And that does beg the interesting question of how far we should move with the London model towards making it a full American model, remembering that the mayor and assembly is, in effect, an American political model. And if you look at the way Obama is having to get his healthcare and banking type reforms through Congress, it's part of a power-sharing agreement where the president has to get Congress to vote things through. Now, you could import all of that into the London system and make the Assembly a more powerful legislative body, and that's personally what I'd do.
I think, correct me if I'm wrong, that Ken Livingstone favoured the idea of the Assembly being made up of the individual borough leaders. What's wrong with that plan, if anything?
Yeah, there's no doubt that Ken did put forward, I mean, he saw the Assembly as, how shall I put it generously, not performing all as well as it might. And he put forward this idea to have the Assembly replaced by a sort of Senate of leaders of the boroughs. I think the difficulty with that myself is that, for all their faults, the Assembly were set up and to some degree do this, and that is they're not too parochial. That is, you know, one of London's long-term difficulties has been that it's very neighbourhood and borough-focused. That's good in some ways, but not so good when it comes to driving through big projects. And if you look at the existing Assembly, it has 14 members elected for constituencies, but these are huge constituencies consisting of two or three boroughs each. Very difficult for those members to say, well, I'm going to fight this little corner for my constituency, because the constituencies are so big. And I think if we had borough leaders as a Senate, marvellous though they are, of course, it would tend to lead to them all sort of fighting the borough's corner, not thinking about London as a whole. And there's a good reason for a power balance, which is what we have in London, between the boroughs representing neighbourhood and local interests and the mayor being the executive for the whole city. It's not unlike the political systems that you meet in Germany or America, where there's a deliberate split of power between different levels, and it actually represents very different interests that we all have, because we as individual citizens, you know, have an interest to make sure our neighbourhood is protected and good to live in, but we also have a city-wide interest to make sure that the transport and the police systems work properly, you know? So
sum up your ideal constitutional settlement for the mayoralty, if indeed it involves a mayoralty at all. Can you put that into a few nice crisp sentences for me?
I think next time there is a review of the Mayor and Assembly, the Greater London Authority model, then it would be good to make a more explicit balance of power between the mayor as the elected executive, who's very power, and the assembly, who are the overseers of the mayor. They could be made more powerful by giving them, in effect, lawmaking powers, as they'd have in an American city model. And that would mean that the mayor had to share power, but still be very powerful. I think that would make the upper tier of London government slightly more accountable than it is, and make it function more effectively in relation to the borough level.
And what about how the money comes in? How would you change that?
Well, I think as far as the money issue is concerned, British local government, including in London, needs more access to local taxation. We have a system where there's very little freedom for councils or the mayor to raise money through local taxes. And this is particularly odd in London, given that London has the highest tax yield of any part of the United Kingdom. And it would be certainly possible to allow the mayor to have access to extra taxes that would make him more autonomous. If you compare London and New York, which are cities that have a great deal in common, the mayor of London gets barely 10% of his overall gross income from council tax, about less than 10%, whereas the mayor of New York gets 60 or 70% of income from local taxes. Now, which of them do you think is going to be more free to make their own decisions?
And then there's the whole question of the areas over which the London mayor has powers now. This is a big subject. Boris just stepped down as chair of the MPA. That whole business of police accountability and control is a complete minefield, as we know. But then there's people sometimes say, well, the London mayor should have much more control over education and health and other things. Where do you stand on those issues?
Personally, I'm in favour of devolution, and I would be in favour of making London, in effect, more like Wales and Scotland. I don't see why London, with a population of nearly 8 million, should have less power in its citywide tier of government, or some people would see as a regional tier of government, less power than, say, the Welsh government, which has a population of 3 million. So, and in Wales, there's no doubt that the Assembly government is responsible for health and education, and miraculously, the sky hasn't fallen in. So why shouldn't London's citywide tier of government have the same kind of powers? Now, that's a very radical thing to suggest, but, it seems to me that London and other parts of England should have proper devolution and more tax-raising power. Doesn't mean that we have to lose equalisation between different parts of the city and country. You can have all of that, but more local independent decision-making. And so I would have a reform that gave the city-wide level of government much more power, akin to the Welsh model at least, and possibly even the Scottish model.
And finally, we are likely, the polls tell us, to have a Conservative government soon. They're very keen on localism. Do you fancy... you're laughing, why?
I'm smiling.
Do you think many of these aspirations or ideas of yours are likely to come to fruition under a Conservative government?
The reason I chortled as you asked the question is that, of course, you know, it's almost a cliche to say all oppositions are localist, and once they get into power, it's like arriving in a signal box in a railway, and suddenly there are all these levers in front of you. You can pull, and they think, oh, who cares? Let's just be centralist like the last lot. And so that's why I smiled. I mean, David Cameron has said he wants to be a radical localist, no less. Now, I think that, let's assume he honestly means that as of today. Why should we assume he doesn't? The difficulty is, once they're in power, if they get into power, they will face all those civil servants with jobs to preserve, who are running things, and frankly, very powerful demands from the media, the national media, including The Guardian and other newspapers, to ensure there are no postcode lotteries. The postcode lottery argument is very powerful in Britain, particularly in England, because England's such a small place. So I think it's much more difficult when you're in government to devolve power, because you end up, in a sense, having to defend differences between the treatment of a child in this area and a child in this area, or an old person here. And that is very difficult. So it would require a cultural change. But I still think, myself, we would be better governed if more decisions were made nearer where we all live.
Okay, interesting times. Thanks very much, Tony.
Thanks a lot.